get to Acts chapter 28, if you are going to follow along in your own Bible. And once you get that, Acts chapter 28, do me a favor, flip a page to the right, and you'll notice there's no Acts chapter 29. Acts chapter 29, that's us. We are the continuation of the book of Acts. But our study through the book of Acts, that stops in Acts chapter 28, the final chapter of the book. Now, I have my heart set on getting this whole chapter taught today. We're already at a disadvantage because, again, Megan took so long with those announcements. We're going to have to replace her. No, I'm kidding. We know it's me. I'm just trying to cover for myself. But I have my heart set on this. If we can't do it, that's fine. But I would like to get chapter 28 finished, our book study of Acts, completely done today, because I am extremely enthused about beginning Romans, the study of the book of Romans next week with you. That is the treatise on salvation by grace through faith alone and not of works, given to us by the Apostle Paul. But first things first, we need to handle Acts chapter 28. And if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to get through this whole chapter today, you know what that means. I'm going to have to move briskly, and I'm going to have to be way more concise with my words. And that would apply to the spiritual lessons that we find in this chapter as well. I like to usually elaborate on those spiritual lessons so you don't miss them. But you're going to have to be a sharp listener and learner today. That is, if I do what I'm supposed to do here and actually move through this a little more quickly. There are certainly some very good spiritual lessons in this chapter that I don't want us to miss, and yet I don't want to further delay our study of the book of Romans. So we'll do our best with it. There are actually quite a few spiritual lessons to be found in Acts chapter 27 and Acts chapter 28. And if I had to boil them all down to just one main emergent theme from the two chapters, I would say it's this: the providence of God. Acts chapter 27, Acts chapter 28. The providence of God. That means God's care for us. God's providing for us. The Lord just watching over, knowing what's going on because of His sovereignty, and then working everything out. That's Paul's story here in Acts 27 and Acts 28. It's Paul, so anything that could go wrong does go wrong. And just when the situation looks dire for Paul, we get those reminders that the storms and the shipwrecks and everything else that's going to happen in this chapter, none of it throws the Lord for a loop. The Lord is just always right on, rock steady as always. He's always there to pick up where human endeavors leave off and rescue Paul, show Himself to be strong on Paul's behalf, and receive glory for what He does in Paul's life. So you can be looking for that theme as we work through this chapter. By all means, do not think that this chapter is just showing off God's providence in the life of Paul. This story is not given to us just to make us feel bad about ourselves and jealous of Paul. We are learning by narrative in the book of Acts. That's what we're doing. And learning by narrative means you read someone else's story. You read someone else's experience with the Lord, and you understand that that is also available to you. So as you're going about through life, you always want to remember that your life is going to continually meet up against this divine providence. He knows all about you, every situation, every mess that you get yourself into, accidentally or intentionally. And God in His providence is there to pick up the pieces, help us out, deliver us when we need it, rescue us when we need it, and be gracious to us when that's what we're needing as well. Before we get going, please do not forget the backdrop for this chapter. Paul was a prisoner of Rome. He had spent 2 years in Caesarea undergoing trial after trial. And seeing that that was going nowhere, Paul had appealed to stand trial before Caesar. So chapter 27 is the account of Paul being taken in protective custody and transported from Caesarea to Rome, where he can stand trial before Nero. And from the get-go, they were delayed by weather, strong winds, strong headwinds pushing them out of the shipping lanes that they were hoping to be in for this journey to make the straight shot. And that delayed them. And eventually, you know, they were on the island of Crete there in Fair Haven. And they were just intending, against Paul's warning, to skip across the island to the other side of the island, Phoenix, which would be a better location, they thought, to winter. And that did not work. And that strong wind was still blowing through there, and it pushed them south and ultimately 500 miles off course. And as bad as that could seem, because that is certainly the bad news there, the good news would be that, well, that's exactly where the Lord wanted to get them, because the Lord had plans on the island of Malta. That's where they landed. We're going to read that today. Malta. The Lord had big plans for the ministry of Paul there on the island of Malta. So, again, who was in charge of that whole situation? The wind pushed them out to sea. We read it multiple times. They completely lost control. They were being driven by the wind. Remember the ministry competition, drifted? They were drifting. The wind was pushing them where it wanted. They lost their bearings. They lost control of their ships. Guess who didn't lose their bearings? Guess who didn't lose control of the ship? Guess who didn't lose control of the situation? God. That is God's divine providence. He got them right where he wanted so they could do exactly what he wanted through the life of Paul. So let's begin reading and finish up this story today. God willing. It's going to be a miracle. Lord, give us a miracle. Verse 1. After we were brought safely through, so remember, they had walked the plank and swam for their lives, that ship, it hit a sandbar and lodged near the island of Malta, but they still had some swimming to do. It's winter, so the water's cold, the weather's cold. It was a terrible situation, but all 276 souls that were on board, they all made it through. They all safely came to the island of Malta, and this is where they learned the name. It says, we then learned that the island was called Malta, and it's actually still called Malta to this day. It is a very small island. It is 17 miles long. That's about the distance from here to Point Marion, PA. And it's about 9 miles wide. That is about the distance from here to Smithfield, Pennsylvania, which I spent much of my very young childhood. So not a real big island. Verse 2, the native people, and please don't think that like naked savages came running out with bones through their noses and spears in their hands. I know when we read that word native, we're thinking that, but this isn't Papua New Guinea here. This is Malta. So these are sophisticated Roman citizens that happen to be native of Malta. That simply means it's where they were born. It's where they lived. I'm a native of PA. I think, Lynn, are you a native of Hawaii? There you go. So wherever we're from and wherever we spend a good portion of our life, we're native to that. They were native to Malta. The native people showed us unusual kindness. And I think I would say that nowadays, anytime someone shows you any kind of kindness at all, it's unusual. But different time, different culture. So this is unusual kindness even for them. This is above and beyond the call of duty just to help these 276 soaking wet and freezing cold souls out. And it says, here's, you know, part of that unusual kindness. For they kindled a fire and welcomed us all because it had begun to rain and was cold. So they were trying to prevent these folks from getting hypothermia. And so it's quite interesting. The people of Malta, they were actually watching this happen. They saw this. They saw the shipwreck. They saw the waves just beating right there at that sandbar, beating against the ship and tearing it apart. They saw them jump the ship like, you know, you walk into a barn and flick on the lights and all the rats scatter. That's what the ship looked like. All these people jumping into the water, swimming to shore. They're watching all of this. And maybe it's good to stop here and make the point, too, that we never know who's watching us in the storms that we're going through in life. And we never know who's paying attention when our life hits shipwreck. And you always want to remember that's an important time in your Christianity, probably more so than ever, because it's easy to act Christian when the seas are smooth and it's smooth sailing and life is good. But, man, you can't forget that when life gets tough and you hit storms and life life brings you to shipwreck, you may not care about your reputation, but you have to remember the Lord has a reputation too. And people are basing their opinion of God on how you handle things in life, and you don't want it to be one of these things where the least little thing goes wrong with you and you just have a meltdown. Lord, why am I going through this? Lord, how come nothing ever works out for me? Are you even paying attention? Do you even care, Lord? Oh, yeah, would you like to come to church with me on Sunday? No, thank you. I'm good. Already doing better than you. I'm an unbeliever, and I already handle my storms better than you do. So just pay attention to that. Opportunities to glorify God. They should glorify God. Verse 3, when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and put them on the fire, a viper, so a deadly venomous snake. Now, a viper is actually a specific kind of venomous snake, and we don't know for sure that this was a viper. We just know that it was a venomous snake. That is what the Greek word indicates here. The ESV went with the translation viper. A viper came out because of the heat, and this makes sense. It was cold. And when it's cold, snakes go dormant. Have you ever found a cold snake? Just like almost like it's dead, but it's not. Well, when a snake gets heat back because they're cold-blooded, that wakes them right up. So Paul, he grabs a bunch of sticks, and there's a viper in there that's dormant. And when it gets close to the heat, as Paul's just tossing the sticks in there, well, that thing wakes right up. And it says that it fastened onto his hand. And, you know, here we go again. Paul the crud magnet. People from Malta, they see these 276 sopping wet human beings. They help them out. They get this big fire together. They're gathering sticks. They're getting wood. They're lighting the fire. No one's bit by a viper. Hard to tell how many people stood there at that fire and grabbed sticks and threw it on the fire. But now it's Paul's turn. And you know what's going to happen. One of those sticks is not a stick at all. It is a viper, and it latches on to the hand of Paul. Just another episode in the adventures of the Apostle Paul while sailing the sea. When you get bit by a venomous snake in a situation like this, where there's not a clinic nearby that has anti-venom, here's what you do. You pray and you get ready to meet Jesus, because that is probably what is going to happen. Especially if this is a viper. Vipers are just some of the worst, extremely venomous. Their fangs, I mean, if you even get nicked by a fang, there's a good chance you lose your life over that. I don't know if you knew this, and this is just free information. This is just a bonus for you coming today. Something very important for you to learn for life. But if you cut the head off of a snake and just like throw it in the path, and you're walking by a couple days later and you happen to step near that viper head and get pricked by that fang, you're still venomated. You still get injected with poison and you still could die from that. That's how serious even just a nick from one of those fangs is if that snake has squirted its venom. And this viper, has clamped down on Paul's hand. It has sunk both of those fangs deep into Paul's hand, and it would not let go. So verse 4, when the native people saw the creature hanging from his hand, so they're just watching all of this. One of the deadliest creatures on the planet is just locked on to Paul's hand and just hanging there as Paul's trying to get that thing to let loose. When they saw this, the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another, "No doubt this man is a murderer. Though he has escaped from the sea, justice has not allowed him to live." You ever know people to jump to conclusions and sometimes they're like really a stretch? It's about as big a stretch as you can get. Pretty big conclusion to jump to. Okay, he survived the shipwreck. Now he's bitten by a viper. That's almost certainly going to kill him. Well, it's pretty obvious what's happening here. Paul is a murderer. Paul is about the worst kind of person that you could ever have on the planet. No, they just don't know who Paul is. They don't know what Paul has been lined up to do by God. So I think it's a good time to go back to Paul's calling from the Lord in Acts chapter 9 and just remember what the Lord told Paul from the beginning. Acts chapter 9, verse 16. This is the Lord speaking to Ananias. For I will show him, Paul, how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. I don't know. That's not what my salvation conversion looked like, but that's what Paul's looked like. Paul, sit down. Let's talk. I'm calling you, but you know, I'm going to be up front with you. You're going to have to go through a lot, buddy. This is just Paul's lot in ministry. He was going to go through a lot. You know, Paul was the kind of guy that couldn't go to an ice cream social without almost dying from something. He just had that kind of, I don't want to say luck, but calling really on his life. This was just a day in the life of the Apostle Paul. SOP, standard operating procedures for the Apostle Paul. And it's because God was allowing all of these extreme catastrophes in the life of Paul so that he could set Paul up in a situation that from those extreme catastrophes, God could get extreme glory after exerting extreme control in Paul's life. And we've talked about that in a previous study, that if you're the kind of person that prays that way, Lord, whatever you want to do today, whatever you want to use my life for, doesn't matter if it's easy or difficult, I'm ready. If you really pray that way, well, I hope you've studied Paul well, because the Lord might take you up on it. He might put you in some sticky situations to glorify himself and to win souls through you. So we see the belief system of these folks on Malta very evidently. They were clearly polytheists. That's going to come out even more plainly in the text as we study. Polytheist means they believed in many gods. So in their minds, Paul's situation involved two of their gods. And that would be Neptune, their god of the sea, and Dike, the goddess of justice and revenge. So this is how they see it. Paul clearly had Neptune angry with him, and somehow Paul escaped the wrath of Neptune. But then he gets to shore, and Dike, the god of justice, catches up with him. And Dike gets him. So Paul gets what he deserves. Justice has been served by the Roman gods. And that is the kind of way that the religious and the superstitious feel about life in general. It's a belief that's common among all religions. I don't include Christianity in this. It's common among all religions. There's just kind of universally that belief that whatever your code of conduct is for your belief system, or whatever your God calls for, if you just live a decent life according to those rules and you please your God, that in life you're going to have a pretty fair ride. Things are going to go very well for you. And contrarywise, if your life is a mess and you're going through shipwrecks and catastrophes, well, then clearly that has to mean that you've angered your God. It's a very pagan belief system. And you'll find it in just about every religion. And superstition is not much different than religion. Really, the only difference between the two is that religion attaches all of its beliefs to a God of some sort, whereas superstition doesn't. It's just that kind of wispy, ethereal, well, the universe kind of controls everything. If I do good, the universe will reward me. If I do bad, the universe will gang up on me. It's a universal belief, but that is not Christianity. And I'm glad that we covered this kind of thoroughly in the last chapter. I mentioned karma, and I said, don't get me started, right? You remember that? Well, Christianity is very different. I shared with you the book of Job. I referenced that, the book of Job. The words of Jesus about the sick man. Who sinned, this man or his parents? Why did this happen to him? I shared with you four different storms of life or shipwrecks that you can go through. And of those four, only one of them is corrective or disciplinary. Only one. And yet on top of that, even including that into the calculation, you still have those four storms, those four shipwrecks in the life of a believer, All four of them are for good purposes and produce good results. So Christianity is very different from any kind of mainstream pagan belief system that kind of goes in the way of karma. So their belief system has them completely unprepared for what is about to happen. God is going to use this viper to accomplish something in 15 minutes that Paul wouldn't be able to accomplish on his own in probably 15 years. So watch this, verse 5. Yeah, this chapter is looking doubtful. He, however, shook off the creature into the fire and suffered no harm. So just take in the scene here. You got the islanders believing that Paul is a murderer. You've got the islanders hating on Paul. You've got Paul trying to shake this snake off into the fire. Starting to sound like a Taylor Swift song. Haters gonna hate. I'm just gonna shake. Shake it off. He shakes it off into the fire. That tells me that Paul was actually using that fire to motivate the snake. He was giving that snake an ultimatum. You can burn alive above the fire, or you can let go and burn more quickly, get it over with, in the fire. So Paul wants this thing off. He's trying his hardest. They're just watching all of this go down. And by the way, if you're wondering, there are no longer venomous snakes on the island of Malta. That was the one thing I liked about Alaska. There are no snakes at all up there. Only pets in cages. Aquariums. Yeah. Now, there are no longer venomous snakes on Malta. Tradition has it that after Paul's trip here to Malta, that any time any of the islanders would see a poisonous snake of any sort, that they would kill it in honor of the Apostle Paul. And before long, every one of those venomous snakes were completely gone, completely wiped out from that island. And of course, everyone would be excited about that, except for maybe PETA. But I have a lot of nightmares about venomous snakes. I don't know why, but this is like my nightmare right here. What Paul went through, my nightmare. But back to the story here. The snake lets go. It's now a fiery serpent. It is a crispy critter. Paul shook it off into the fire. So now what? Well, now's the fun part. We watch Paul very closely. How's his breathing? Is his breathing shallowing? Is that a little bit of foam in the corner of his mouth? Let's watch for convulsions. How's he acting? How's he looking? You watch Paul very closely. And you wait. And that's exactly what they do. Verse 6. They were waiting for him to swell up or suddenly fall down dead. Thanks a lot. Very helpful, guys. I wonder if they took bets. You know, $20 says 10 minutes, he's dead. I'll take 20 on 5 minutes. 5 minutes. He won't survive 5 minutes. This is a serious, serious moment. Reading on. But when they had waited a long time. Okay, who had 10 minutes? Yeah, you're out. Who had 5 minutes? You're out too. When they had waited a long time and saw no misfortune come. This must have been interesting. I just imagine Paul regaling the campfire with stories of all the stuff that he survived. Guys, this is actually my fourth shipwreck. You know that? Yep, survived them all. How about my stonings? You guys want to hear about those? I just imagine Paul there talking and laughing at the fire, roasting hot dogs and s'mores. And they're all just watching him with eyes as big as saucers, waiting for him to drop, waiting for him to swell up, waiting for him to show some signs that this snake is going to kill him. But it never does happen. And why isn't Paul freaking out right here? Because he's inhuman? No, it's not that. Well, he has a couple words from the Lord. First of all, he knows that the Lord told him, Paul, you're getting to Nero. You're going to stand before Nero. That was a promise from God. And Paul knows, he's just simple enough in his faith to know that if God said you're going to stand before Nero, well, a little snake isn't going to prevent that from happening. He's going to stand before Nero, just as the Lord said. And also, Paul has another word of promise from the Lord. It would have been passed down from the other 11 apostles and Matthias. And that would be the promise that the Lord gave to mission workers in the Great Commission. And I'll take this from Mark chapter 16, verse 15 through 18. I'll read this to you real quick. Not that we have the time for it, but we'll make the time. Jesus said, "Go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved, but whoever does not believe will be condemned. And these signs will accompany those who believe. In my name, they will cast out demons. They will speak in new tongues. They will pick up serpents with their hands." Now, not intentionally. The Lord isn't giving them service suggestions, like do this in your services. No, he's not saying intentionally, but they could unintentionally pick up a serpent, get bitten by it, a venomous snake, and be just fine. That's what the text is trying to get at. "And if they drink any deadly poison, it will not hurt them." The point of this text is that any naturally deadly situation that a missionary worker would get themselves into for the sake of the gospel, the Lord is going to take care of them. The Lord is going to help them. Poison won't kill them. The snake bite won't bother them. So Paul has a couple very strong words from the Lord on this, and he's completely calm and collected here. How would you do? Be honest. I think I might do pretty well in most scenarios, but the snake bite one, I think that one might get me. That one might freak me out a little bit. Reading on in verse 6. "So they saw nothing was happening to Paul, so they changed their minds and said that he was a god." Oh, okay. Yeah, we got it completely wrong, guys. We thought Paul was a murderer, but he's clearly a god. It just makes sense, you know. He survived the sea. He beat Neptune at his own game. He gets on land. He gets bitten. That's Dike trying to get justice. But Paul survives the snake bite. Not only that, he's not even wounded from it. Nobody gets bitten by a viper and walks away unscathed like that. So clearly, Paul is a god and quite a mighty one. To be able to conquer Neptune and Dike at their own games. So God has used this viper bite to get everybody's eyes on Paul. Again, yeah, they're watching him closely. What's going to happen? Morbid curiosity, like driving by the wreck and rubbernecking. You got to see what's going to happen. Well, all eyes are on Paul. And the Lord is going to use this. The Lord, don't miss this, the Lord intentionally gave these islanders a reason to believe the worst about Paul so that in just a few moments the Lord could flip the script and show them the reasons that they needed in order to believe the best about Paul. And God is going to use that as a platform for Paul. And personally, I think the Lord wanted these people from Malta to believe that Paul was a god for a little while. I believe the Lord wanted that so that Paul could have the highest platform possible. And so they could get up there with this authority that's given to him from the Lord, the people thinking he's a god, and then he can get up there and set the record straight and say, "Look, I'm not a god, but I know him, the one and only true and living God, and I'd like to tell you about that God." So, the Lord might do this to you too from time to time. He might give the people around you a reason to believe the worst about you. And that's tough for a while, especially when it lasts for a long time. But I find that when the Lord does that, usually it's only so that in the near future, the Lord can flip the script on that too. And give those same people reasons to believe the best about you. And if God does that, if he gives you that kind of elevated platform, that is an opportunity to humble yourself and glorify the Lord. Don't do what Herod did in Acts chapter 12. He gave an oration to the people of Tyre and Sidon. And man, they were so stoked. Maybe a lot of it was flattery, probably, but boy, they acted so exciting. They said, "Oh my goodness, what a message. This is the voice of a God and not a man." And unfortunately, you can't believe your own press. Because your press is probably going to do one or two things. It's going to say things about you positively that aren't true and make you appear bigger and better than you are, or negatively that aren't true and belittle you below what you should be. Well, Herod believed his own press. And he got to thinking, you know, I think that fits kind of nice. God, Herod, I kind of like that. You know what? Now that I think about it, I've always been special. I'm kind of like the greatest person I know, and I know a whole lot of people. Yeah, I think I'll wear that badge. I am God. And of course, the one true God was offended by that and resolved that matter by judging Herod very swiftly. Don't be like Herod from Acts chapter 12. Humble yourself and glorify the Lord with those platforms. Verse 7, now in the neighborhood of that place were lands belonging to the chief men of the island named the chief man of the island named Publius, and he would be the governor of Malta here, who received us, all 276 of them, and entertained us. Now, don't be thinking like karaoke bar here or something. He's not like singing and dancing for them. Entertain means he found them all lodging. And this guy had connections on the island. That's a lot of people to put up. But he did. He put them all up. He found them housing. He entertained us hospitably for 3 days. Verse 8, it happened that the father of Publius, who would be a very old man, lay sick with fever and dysentery. And that's definitely not good. I mean, how many perfectly good games of Oregon Trail have been wrecked by dysentery? You know it's a serious thing, right? Everyone younger than me, what? No one's heard of Oregon Trail? All right, well, that's fine. Good for you guys, you young people. But this disease was known historically as Malta fever. Now, it's called something different nowadays. They call it brucellosis, and you can look it up on the internet. It was a common thing at the time. It was contracted pretty regularly because the people would end up drinking infected, unpasteurized milk from the goats that were on the island, and that would cause their sickness. It actually does still happen to this day on Malta. The only difference is now that they have medications, they have health care that can treat it quickly, and so they're just fine. But the symptoms were flu-like, fever, profuse sweating, joint and muscle pain, nausea, vomiting, and severe diarrhea. I know that sounds like TMI, but yeah, I really need you to think about this, okay? Because they did not have treatment for Malta fever at the time. So if you were going to survive Malta fever, you had to depend on your own immune system. And those who did survive Malta fever, it would take them anywhere from 3 months to 3 years to fully recover from it. So just go back through that list of symptoms. I mean, just pick out the ones. Severe diarrhea. How about severe diarrhea for 3 years of your life? How about some of those symptoms for 3 years steady? And that's just constantly weakening your immune system, and you need your immune system to fight that off. So usually what would happen is that would kill a lot of people. It was just overwhelming for the immune system. What great thing is Luke was on board. Luke was shipwrecked. Luke's on the island. He's a doctor. Send Dr. Luke in, right? Let Dr. Luke go see this guy and see if Luke can help him. Is that what they do? Nope. They're gonna send in the preacher. Reading on in verse 8. And Paul visited him. Paul visited Publius's sick father and prayed, and putting his hands on him, healed him. Of course, that would be the Lord healing Publius's father through the hands of Paul. Verse 9. And when this had taken place, the rest of the people on the island who had diseases also came and were cured. The rest of the people on the island that were sick and diseased and had hurts and pains, the rest of them came out to Paul and were healed. I guess word spreads pretty quickly on a small island. Everyone heard, hey, Paul's healing people. You know that guy we thought was a murderer? Yeah. Well, then we thought he was a god. Yeah. Well, we're not sure what he is right now, but he's out there healing people. You gotta get in on this. You still sick? Yep. Get out there and see Paul. And God physically healed, the way I take this, the whole island. I mean, there is some hyperbole in Scripture, but usually not in a reading or in a context like this. I don't think this is hyperbole. I think the Lord healed everyone that had ailments and diseases on the island. But we do have to be careful with this because physical healing is never the be-all, end-all. How many of you know physical healing is not the greatest miracle that God does? Because you're, let's face it, going to get sick again. You're going to get hurts and pains again. You're going to eventually have to die unless you stick around to the rapture. So no, physical healing, that's not the greatest miracle. The greatest miracle that the Lord does is the very thing that physical healing symbolizes. God does physical healings, first of all, because He loves us and wants to relieve us, sure. But there's always a spiritual reason for our healings, and that is to show us physically what God can do in our lives spiritually. It's always the point. Here's the message that God is sending across the island of Malta right now. Just as I healed every one of you physically, I can do that spiritually through salvation and relationship with me. Verse 10. Oh, I do want to add here that some Bible scholars give the Apostle Paul here a hard time because it does not read in the text that Paul shared the gospel in any way. Did you notice that? We're just moving through this story. We're giving the highlights. Never do you see Paul preaching or giving a message here. We read about them thinking Paul's a god, and we don't read about Paul saying, no, I'm not a god. I know God. I'm not a god. We read about these healings, and one after another, people are being healed, and we don't read about Paul saying, look, this is not me. This is God, and here's what he wants you to know through these acts of grace, these acts of healing. Here's what he wants you to know. And so Bible scholars can tend to give Paul a hard time here. But would you just, like, use your brain with me for a second? We've been studying the life of Paul. If you know anything about Paul, do you really think it was possible for Paul to be in a situation where he was accused of being a god and have him refrain from giving a sermon? Do you think that's possible? Do you think it's possible for the whole island, one after another, to come to Paul and the Lord healing them through the hands of Paul? Do you think it's possible for all of that to happen and Paul not once say, oh, by the way, this is the Lord. And let me tell you about His Christ. And let me tell you about salvation and the greater points that physical healing is pointing us to. You think that's possible? I don't think that's possible. Paul would preach to anything that breathed. There's no way Paul did not preach the gospel over and over again during his time on this island. So, yeah, I think Paul did exactly what the Lord wanted him to here. Verse 10, they, the islanders, also honored us greatly. And when we were about to sail, they put on board whatever we needed. So they loaded them up with supplies. Verse 11, after 3 months, so they had wintered on Malta, good decision. After 3 months, we set sail in a ship that had wintered in the island, a ship of Alexandria with the twin gods as a figurehead. And that means that on the front of that ship, on the bow of that ship, two of the Roman gods were carved into the front of that ship. You've probably seen wooden boats like that, and they'll have a figure of some sort on each side of the bow of the ship. Well, in this case, it would be Castor and Pollux. Those were believed to be the two gods of travelers. So, like, if you were traveling, those were the two gods that you wanted to pray to. That was their domain. It reminds me a little bit of what the Catholics do with Saint Christopher. They believe that Saint Christopher is the patron saint of the traveler. So if you're traveling, you want to have a Saint Christopher medallion hanging from your rearview mirror or a St. Christopher necklace around your neck, and that's going to protect you in your travels. Now, we all know that there's nothing to that. That is the worship of saints, and we We would preach against that. We would teach against that at Anchored Fellowship. We all know the truth of it. You do not need a St. Christopher medallion to be protected in your travels. You just need an Anchored Fellowship bumper sticker. That's all you need. And then you're good to go. No, you give me my choice, I'm just going to pick the Lord. If I'm traveling, St. Christopher can have the day off. I don't need him. I just want the Lord. If Maggie's driving, maybe I'll try the St. Christopher thing. Just for the extra, you know, help. No, I'm kidding. Maggie's a good driver. Very good driver. So, religion. Roman religion. Notice they found another Alexandrian ship. This was a common shipping lane. Rome had a population of between 1 to 2 million at this time. It was not rural and agricultural. It was urban. So they got all of their grain shipped in. Most of that came from Egypt, the breadbasket of the world. So all of these ships from Alexandria would leave Egypt with grain. They'd come up there, deliver it to Rome, and Rome would be fat and happy up there. So another ship from Alexandria, it had wintered on the island as well. They hopped that ship. Verse 12, putting in at Syracuse, which was another, it's on another island. It's right there by by Malta, about 60 miles from Malta. And it says, putting in at Syracuse, we stayed there for 3 days. Verse 13, and from there we made a circuit and arrived at Regium. So that is on the big toe of Italy. I'll show you that next week in our on our map as we finish Acts chapter 28. But that's another 70 miles of travel. And after one day, a south wind sprang up, and on the second day, we came to Puteoli. Now, that is about 100 miles north on the west side of Italy. And from here on forward in this journey, they're hoofing it. They're on foot now. Verse 14, there we found brothers, believers in Christ, and were invited to stay with them for 7 days. And so we came to Rome. Paul finally got to meet these Christians up in Rome that he was so anxious to see. He had been really looking forward to that. And again, we don't really know much about that church in Rome and how it got there, but there was definitely a growing Christian presence in Rome at the time. It was not because of Paul. Paul did not start that church. Paul didn't do any work in that area. But Paul heard about them during, I think it was the second missionary journey, correct me if I'm wrong, and he had already written the Epistle of Romans to them. So they know Paul, and they already love Paul. Paul is sort of like a fellowship hero for them. And I'm just wondering at this point, though, where is Julius? You remember him? The centurion, the guy that's supposed to be in charge of all this? By the way, I accidentally called him Lucius like 3 times last week. I don't know why I did that. Julius, and he was supposed to be in charge of Paul. And as we're reading this, we just don't see any sign of him. It's almost like the balance of power has shifted. And Julius is just like, yeah, Paul, whatever you want to do. Go hang out here? Yeah, sure, that's fine. I think by this time, more than likely, Lucius, just kidding, Julius is probably saved. And he's just in awe of the Apostle Paul. This guy has seen Paul do some incredible things and know some incredible things. He's the reason they survived the boat, the ship. So big changes here as Julius just goes along with whatever Paul's doing. Verse 15, and the brothers there, the believers, when they heard about us, came as far as the Forum of Appius and 3 taverns to meet us. On seeing them, Paul thanked God and took courage. So I tell you what, let's do this. Let's pull up the map for one final time here, and we're going to close on this note. We'll pick up at verse 16 next week. I just want to show you where we've come from. You know the early part of this journey, and they're ending up at Fair Havens. Their attempt to try to get right there to Phoenix, the weather pushing them 500 miles off course. That little dot there, that's Malta. And they hopped that ship after 3 months of wintering there. They stayed the whole winter there on Malta. Must have been pretty incredible revival having Paul on your island for 3 months and not being able to escape because of the weather. And they pushed into Syracuse from Syracuse. Now they're on the boot, the big toe of the high heel of Italy. See, that looks like a high heel. And you guys know about that joke now, so you should have laughed. But their last trip on a ship was from Regium to Puteoli. And now they're going to be walking this whole way. So here's what we just read. Paul's right here in Puteoli. He is heading for Rome to have that meeting with Caesar Nero. And see these two locations, three taverns, and the forum on the Appian Way. The believers from Rome had got word from the believers from Rome that Paul had already bumped into and stayed with for 7 days. So they get word that Paul is coming to Rome. And I love this part of the story because, most church folks, when you get visitors, they're like, oh, okay, great. Well, our church service is 10:30 on Sunday. You know, come on out if you'd like. If not, well, we'll catch you next time. What I love about this is when rumor gets to the church that Paul is coming to Rome, they're like, dude, we're not even waiting for service time. We're canceling our plans. We're dropping everything, and we're going to go out and meet him. We want to be with him. We want to share time with him as long as we can. So some of those folks made it all the way to three taverns, and then some of those folks made it all the way out and met Paul as far as the forum on the Appian Way. That's a good distance to travel to see this guy. They're excited about him. He's a hero. They've read the book. He's given them the treatise on salvation. And they want to spend as much time with him as possible. And I love to see that kind of enthusiasm among believers. We read it in our opening verse today. I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. You remember when you were a kid and your parents said, all right, let's go to church. And you were like, oh. That just really cuts into my basketball time, my football time, and I can't wear my sweats. It's great to see enthusiasm among believers. Can't wait to get to church, hear rumor about a brother or sister visiting from out of town. Oh, let's go see him. We love that guy. We love that gal. I just love to see this kind of enthusiasm because ultimately it's enthusiasm for the Lord. And we're going to read next week that when Paul was encouraged by the fact that they came out to visit, and he didn't start by thanking them. Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming all this way to see me. That's so kind. He starts by thanking the Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for these people in my life. Thank you, Lord, for their love for me and my love for them. All right, let's stand.